Support for this podcast is brought to you by the Wyoming Humanities. We take a closer look at our human experiences and use stories to explore culture, history, and contemporary issues. You can find us on thinkwhy.org.
So I went back to New York, joined CNN, and felt that the real mission to increase global understanding through communication was really a valuable thing to be involved in, and that's how I started at CNN.
Hello, I'm Emmy DeGrappa, and this is What's Your Why? Each week, we bring you stories asking our guests the question why. We learn about their passion, why they do what they do, why should we care, and what can we learn? What better place to explore the human landscape than from the state known for its incredible landscapes, Wyoming? And what better organization than Wyoming Humanities? Serving our state for over 45 years, we share stories, ideas, and wisdom about the human experience. Welcome to What's Your Why? Today, we are talking to Kitty Pilgrim. Kitty has worked as a New York-based anchor and correspondent for CNN for 24 years. Her travels have taken her on special assignments to Russia, Cuba, China, Japan, South Korea, Europe, and parts of Africa. In domestic reporting, she covered economics, politics, and a range of other topics. She was part of the CNN team that broadcast continuously in New York during the September 11th attacks and in the weeks thereafter. Welcome, Kitty.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here in Wyoming. I love this state. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Well, we are so glad to have you. And the first thing I want to start out is just kind of asking you what your background is. What brought you into working as a CNN reporter?
You know, I didn't set out to be in journalism. I didn't set out to be in media. I felt that the world was a very dangerous place when I was in college. It was the Cold War. And so I took Russian studies, international economics, history, politics, the hard subjects, because I felt that I wanted to contribute in some way to world peace, and I started to move in that direction. What happened was, when I was in graduate school at Columbia University in New York, I got an internship to go to Europe in Brussels, and I was working at the U.S. Embassy there, and I noticed CNN on the screen in the embassy, and I said, "What's that?" And they told me, "It's CNN." No one had heard of CNN. It was very early on. And I found out that they were going to do the first global broadcast in English, that was their mission. And I thought, that kind of information sharing, that kind of communication will be beneficial, even more beneficial than going into, say, diplomacy or something like that, if I could participate in that project. So I went back to New York, joined CNN, and felt that the real mission to increase global understanding through communication was really a valuable thing to be involved in. And that's how I started at CNN. I ended up 25 years at CNN.
And your passion was really international studies?
International affairs, yes. I'm very active in that. I believe that the more we talk to our friends and allies, the more we communicate, the more overtures we make, the safer the world will be.
And do you think that's still true with your life experience now, with what's happened in Russia and China and what our relations are with them now?
Yeah. Let me tell you a story. I was in Egypt about a few years ago, right after the Tahrir Square revolution. Mm-hmm. I was with my son. I was researching a novel. I wasn't there on assignment for a news broadcast. Brought my son with me. We had a guide who was a 25-year-old Egyptian young man. That young man and my son could talk about the same rock bands. They could talk about the same sort of social things. Mm-hmm. The fact that they could communicate in different languages to each other about rock bands and had a commonality, the fact that we now are communicating in such a way through multi-platforms, arts, entertainment, literature, news, television, we have so many ways to communicate with other cultures and to create commonalities that we're in really good shape now, I think. I think we have the tools at our disposal to actually help increase understanding.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in upstate New York. We often went to New York City. My family's 16 generations New Yorkers, so we are really New Yorkers. But I traveled a lot when I was young, so I really had a global perspective from a very young age.
I was wondering what gave you the passion to have that vision to travel and work internationally.
Yeah, my mom loved to travel, but sort of on a sort of entertainment level. She just loved to swan around the world. And so it actually brought new cultures to me very early on. One of my earliest memories is my mom sitting on the bed saying, Mommy's going to Greece. And I had no idea what Greece was. So, you know, I was introduced to other cultures through her travels and through her stories.
And what were your conversations at home around the table?
We didn't really talk politics very much. We talked about art and gardening and kind of normal things, you know, sort of swim team, very normal American conversations, nothing very highfalutin. In contrast, my son once said to me, Mom, do we really have to talk about Iraq today at the dinner table? And I think he was like 7, and I realized, I'm making this too heavy. I really have to, like, lighten up with the kids. So we didn't have very heavy conversations when I was young.
Were you already working for CNN when you had your boys?
I became a production assistant and became pregnant at the exact same time. So I hid it for as long as I could. I was the first woman in the New York Bureau to have a baby. They assumed I would quit. I said, watch me, I'm coming back. Basically, my career grew along with the kids. Someone told me there's no really good timing, so I thought, okay, there's no really good timing. We're just going to do it all at once. I should add to that I was a single mother for 20 years.
Oh, my. And you were a CNN
correspondent with two boys.
Wow. How has it changed in the world for women working?
Well, the stigma of having children and working is gone. So they assumed I would quit the second I got pregnant. I didn't. Also, I think, you know, companies are much more family friendly, so that helps. Turner was very, very good to me, and I have to say that the Turner companies were really great to me on my maternity leaves, but there was no set policy in place. We had to make it up as we went.
Did you have time off?
I had time off. They asked me how much I thought I needed to have a baby. That's how early these conversations were. So I said, I didn't know. I never had a baby before. So it kind of was an informal conversation, to say the least.
So what would you say to Sheryl Sanders? What would you say about her theory about women reach a ceiling and they don't go any farther because they don't believe in themselves or they can't navigate.
Envision themselves.
Right.
You know, it depends on the individual. I never put a limit on myself. I mean, I had to cut some corners. For example, it's a very obvious example. I realized that if I was going to be a news reporter, I couldn't be clopping around on 4-inch heels. So I wore flats in the newsroom. And no, it wasn't glamorous, but I got the job done. So I think sometimes you just have to be very practical about what you're willing to give up and what you're willing to keep. Well, kept my career, gave up the glamorous footwear. It seemed an easy trade-off to me. So I don't know about leaning in. It's just you really cannot have it all. You can't be a fashion plate and have kids. And you have to give up some things. Mm-hmm. And the things you give up are your choice. Just make good choices, as they say.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to other women today entering into that field since you've had 25 years? Is that right? 25 years
25
working?
Years, yeah. I think it's a great field. I think it's a field that you learn something every day. But, you know, there are other fields where you learn something every day. You know, I talk to people in the healthcare industry, and that's, you know, growing in many different directions, and they're learning something new every day. There's so many fields now. We're not stuck anymore. There are no parameters. And so whatever field you're in, it's moving. It's dynamic. No, you don't have to be a journalist to learn about the world. You can be a really great high school teacher and break open some barriers in the curriculum to teach your students. Or you can broaden out your own mind and bring people with you. I think your choice of profession has to be based on your personality and, you know, your lifestyle choices. But whatever you're doing, you can push barriers.
So who were the people that you most looked up to when you were working as a correspondent, when you were working in the newsroom?
I interned for Judy Woodruff at PBS. Oh. She's astonishing. There weren't very many women in the industry. I didn't have role models because there weren't any, but I didn't set limits on what I could do. So it's not like I was feeling in competition with men. It's just that in my own head, I was exactly equal. So I didn't have role models. I just didn't see myself as any different than men. So if they could go on assignment to Russia, I could go on assignment to Russia. If they could go to Africa, I could go to Africa. There was no difference in my mind between me and a male reporter sitting next to me at the next desk. So I think that's the thing that kept me challenging myself and not accepting any limits.
I think that's excellent. I think maybe that could be something that keeps women from pushing ahead because they put themselves in different stereotypes, you know, don't you think?
I do think so. You know, you really have to not care what people say about you because everyone has an opinion about whether you should be doing this or that. And you have to know, you just speak to your own heart and say, what really makes me happy? What really made me happy was being a great reporter, going around the world, learning things, and then coming home to the bosom of my family, which happened to be three people, me and my two sons, and enjoying my own family. And I didn't see any reason why I could had to give up either one of those. And actually what I saw around the world actually made me more committed to my family, more grateful for what I had, more happy in my own skin because I had such a lovely, you know, two lovely sons in my own career and my own life. And I think that, you know, you have to set your own terms. And then once you set your own terms, there's the capacity to be really fulfilled.
Well, I want to ask you about your books, because I know you came out with a book called The Explorer's Guide in 2010. Is that correct?
It's The Explorer's Code.
Oh, it's The Explorer's Code. Okay, yeah. Thank you. And you're on your way to a second book? Or?
No, I'm writing my fourth.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, no, I don't do anything halfway.
I guess not.
So I wrote The Explorer's Code one night because I was coming home from the CNN studio and the news is just really, really very distressing. And I needed a way to decompress after I did a broadcast in 12-hour days. And I was reading fiction, and a lot of fiction is very stressful. It's, you know, I was reading mass market fiction, and it's about murders, and, you know, it was really distressful. And I thought, can't anybody write anything pleasant? And so I actually, just as a mental health exercise, started to invent two characters. One was an oceanographer, and the other was an archaeologist, and they have sort of Agatha Christie meets James Bond kind of adventures around the world. And I wrote this entirely for my own amusement, didn't care if anybody ever read it. And when I finished, I sent it off to an agent just because I finished it. And he came and met with me and said, I really think you should do this professionally. So I said, well, what are you crazy? I'm like a CNN anchor, prime time. And he said, no, I really think you should do this professionally. You're really good at this. My contract came up a little while later and I decided, do I want 3 more years of, you know, sitting at the anchor desk under enormous pressure, or do I want to put myself on assignment, travel around the world at my own pace, research my books in the places where I want to go, and write novels that people can read to feel, you know, charmed and relaxed. And it's sort of a mission that I think we all need to put our feet up every now and then, break open a box of cookies or have a cup of tea and read something pleasant just to escape. And so I'm writing these thrillers that are really just an enjoyable experience.
In the back of your mind, obviously you were a voracious reader because of your reporting, right?
Well, also, any reporter has to jump on a plane and you always grab a novel because you're going to get stuck. So then you have something to entertain yourself. So I'd been doing all this reading of mass market fiction for like 20 years, right? So I knew kind of how to do it. I knew how to write
it. Okay. So why did you choose fiction? Why didn't you write a fact-based novel because of your, you know, correspondent experience in traveling to all those countries?
Yeah, I had a vision. I wanted to write novels that inform as well as entertain. Mm-hmm. And so I do put facts in the novels. I've researched them deeply. They are accurate. So some novels are not accurate in historical detail or... And so I think I read Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, and when I realized that all the details were somewhat made up, I was offended. So then I thought, I want to write something that people can take to the bank. When they learn that in my book, then they learned it. And so I based my novels on field sciences. So the first one was Arctic exploration, and I did a lot of research on Arctic exploration, and so I put that in the book. My latest one is on volcanology, the study of volcanoes, and I talk to a lot of scientists about volcanoes. So when you read the book and go through the plot, you've learned almost everything there is to know in the current science of volcanology, even though you've just read a mass market thriller or book. So I feel that my mission to entertain and inform is, you know, sort of important because, you know, we shouldn't just read junk when we're trying to relax. We should learn new things.
So who are some of the great novelists that you could kind of point to that maybe inspired you?
Well, of course, you know, because of travel, Hemingway, right? Because
right.
of all the Spanish okay. writing. I love Somerset Maugham. I've always loved Edith Wharton for the interior life of her characters. I mean, I read everything. Mm-hmm. I read everything. So when you're a reporter, you grab whatever you can get, and you just read and read and read and read and read, because when you get to where you're going, you're going to be working. So you're just entertaining yourself on the way. So I read everything.
That's funny. I always wonder who reads those trashy sex novels.
Those I don't read. Okay, so actually, do
I just
okay. Let's make that clear. So actually, when the Explorer's Code came out, 50 Shades came out, and everyone kept saying, "Is it really sexy like 50 Shades?" And I said, "No, I'm making a real stand here that minor romantic thrillers." But they are the kind of book that your grandmother could read. They are the kind of book that you could hand to your daughter. And they could have a conversation about that book together and nobody would be embarrassed.
Oh. So my last question, or actually I'd like you to tell me, who do you want to inspire?
That's a very easy question for me. So in writing my novels, my character is an oceanographer. And I had a 15-year-old who came up to me one summer and said, "Can I read your books?" And I said, "Well, they're romances, so only if your mother says yes." She read it. She came back to me and she said the next year, "I want to be an oceanographer just like your character, Cordelia. I want to inspire the next generation of women to seize with both hands the life that they want, not accept limits, and to just go and do what speaks to their heart the way that I did. And I think that if we all do that, we'll all be so much happier."
That's a great life lesson. What do you think one of your great life lessons is that you learned working for CNN?
That we have a common humanity. I don't think there's anywhere where I ever went that I didn't feel connected to the people that I spoke to and that I reported on. So a woman taking care of her children in the worst slum in South Africa was as close to me in experience because of her wants for her children. There are ways to make connections to people. And I think that we have to stop thinking of ourselves as us and them, that we're all really on Earth for the same sort of reasons and we have the same commonalities and we should have to find those instead of finding the differences. And I learned that over and over again.
Wow, I love that. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much, Kitty.
Great to be here and nice talking to you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I'm Emmy DeGrappa. This Think Why podcast is brought to you by the Wyoming Humanities. We use the humanities as a lens to explore the human experience. You can find us online at thinkwhy.org.